the single most successful continuing genre in the history of the movies was science fiction, fantasy, and horror films. Mm-hmm. Even from the silent days, those movies never went out of style and they never didn't make money. Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho.
Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me. Well, we're here at Icons of Darkness in Hollywood, right on Hollywood Boulevard, and Rich Carrell is the proprietor of this amazing place, which I was not even expecting what we were going to discover here today. And it's incredible. Basically, just so I can give an overview, is it's got probably the best collection of screen-worn costumes, props, monsters, gore, everything you could ever really want if you're a movie fan. Rich, first of all, how long have you been here for? Because this place is like an untapped treasure for Hollywood, for sure.
We moved in here just under 2 years ago. This coming, the end of September, we'll be here for 2 years. And then we're going to move all this stuff to Vegas. So it's going to be in a much bigger version of this. Because it's funny, it's people looking, they see all this stuff and they go, oh my God, there's so much stuff. And I have like twice as much stuff. So
this is only half of the collection that you have.
Yeah. Yeah.
So how did you start amassing such a collection? Because this is a high tech, and just so you guys know, we're sitting in here right now, and I'm looking right now at Alien, Star Wars, Terminator, Harry Potter. I mean, that's just the stuff, that Planet of the Apes. These are just stuff I can see right from my view right now. This place has got everything in here.
Right. When I was a kid, I was lucky enough to be, I was an actor, you know, and kid actors were kind of dime a dozen, but I was lucky enough to get hired as a regular on a show called Leave It to Beaver.
Who's your character?
I played a guy named Richard Rickover. He was kind of like the Eddie Haskell of Beavs Friends.
By the way, you've got a whole other podcast that we need to talk about your Hollywood experiences, but continue, please.
Okay, so anyway, when I was working on Leave It to Beaver, Jerry Mathers, who played Beaver, and he was, I think I was 3 weeks older than Jerry. We were literally like clones. We just loved all the same stuff, and we had a great time together. He's still one of my best friends. I was best man at his wedding. We loved horror movies, and here we were at Universal, where they made all the horror movies. So we used to say to our makeup guy, hey, you know, we were 10 years old, you know, hey, can you take us to the makeup lab, you know? So finally the guy said, yeah, okay, come on, boys, let's go. So we went up there, and we saw all this great stuff that we recognized from, you know, watching the old movies. But we were amazed at what they were throwing in the trash. So, Chris, back in those days, they didn't collect this stuff.
This is the 50s, right?
Yeah. Well, it started, I was started with them in 59. Okay. So this would be like right around 59, 60.
Gotcha.
And so I saw this head in the trash from a movie called Abbott and Costello Meet Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde. And so I, you know, I knew what it was, and I thought someone was going to throw coffee on it or something. And I said to this guy behind the counter, hey, can I take that? And he goes, oh, yeah, sure, take it. And that's, by the way, I still have
trash.
That. They threw it in the trash, yeah. So now, you know, it started this collecting thing, and I started getting more and more of the stuff. I started making friends with the guys who did the makeup and the makeup effects guys and the people who worked at the labs. Then I started collecting masks, like from the Don Post Studios, and those guys made the best over-the-counter masks, again, with the Universal licenses. Mm-hmm. So they were making the Wolfman and Dracula and Frankenstein and all that stuff. I started collecting all that stuff, and then this just became a bigger collection, more and more and more. It's not only this collection, I have a Halloween collection, which is also vintage Halloween.
Like the movie Halloween or the holiday?
No, the holiday.
Gotcha.
So, I mean, I've been collecting and collecting and collecting it. And I spent my entire career, and knock on wood, I mean, I was in television production for, you know, 56, 57 years. But the entire time this was going on, which was all comedy, my hobby was the polarity of that, which was all the science fiction and horror and fantasy stuff. My parents thought I was crazy. They said, why do you like all this stuff? Because they weren't into it at all. But it was just, I had that bug, you know, it's just, I just loved all this stuff.
So you worked in Hollywood for many years, very successful as a director, as a producer, and as a creator. You mentioned earlier that you created Hannah Montana.
Yeah, I'm co-creator of Hannah Montana.
Which probably tells me where you got at least some of the cash for this stuff that you have in here. What would you estimate the total value of your collection to be?
Well, it was appraised about, I don't know, 8 months ago at about 22, 23 million. So there's a lot of stuff. Yeah. It's a lot of stuff because the stuff at auction has quadrupled in price since when I started buying. So, you know, I'm offered like 3 or 4 items a week because I'm in a network of collectors and all the collectors know one another.
So people are trying to get you to, hey, I've got this. Would you like to buy it? Sort of a thing.
Yeah, that kind of thing. And then The auction houses, they get a hold of you and say, oh, actually, some of the auction houses actually contact me to see what I think things are worth. But anyway, so I'm always buying stuff. And my wife is a great sport about all this stuff because we live in a completely normal house. We don't live in like the Adams family house. We live in a normal house. We don't have this stuff all over the house. But she's great about it. And, you know, because the postman shows up like with these coffin-shaped boxes. And she says, yeah, just bring that in here. You know, come on in.
Well, so, it's funny because I've been to Tom Savini's house. Mm-hmm. And Tom Savini's house is filled with all this stuff. But it's like a hoarder's yeah. version of this.
Yeah.
You can't even find anything. It's like, oh, there's Robbie the robot. I got it. Just right in the middle of his like living room. But this is much more organized. And like you said, like it's very well placed out. You can see very well signed. So you can tell what everything is.
Yeah. We want everybody to come through. If you're a science fiction, fantasy, and horror fan, and you come through here, you'll have a great time. You'll recognize a lot of stuff. And then everything's labeled so you can see what it is that you're looking at. Because you know what's funny is a lot of these famous characters, especially in movies that have prequels and sequels and all that, there's different versions of stuff. There's different versions of aliens. There's different versions of predators. There's different versions of things from Hunger Games and Jurassic Park and everything else. So when you come through here, it's all labeled for you so you know what it is. So you're going to see all the original stuff.
What was your first piece that you have in here that you bought? Was there something that kind of took you from finding masks in the garbage until now I've got a legit Darth Maul, you know, outfit or whatever it may be?
The stuff, the oldest stuff that goes way, way back is probably the first stuff that I bought. And so you're talking about the Wicked Witch, like from Wizard of Oz. That's 1939. That's my favorite piece in this whole place here.
You actually have Margaret Hamilton's Wicked Witch costume.
No, that's not. That's a replica costume.
Gotcha.
The Wicked Witch costume. You and I were talking about stuff like this. Her entire costume now, if it included the hat, would be about. It'd be close to $2 million.
Wow.
To buy that. And like a Darth Vader costume, if it was really David Prowse. Full. I have a touring costume that ILM built for The Empire Strikes Back in here, beautiful. But a Prowse costume would be about $4.5 million.
So with the Wicked Witch costume, you said it's your favorite piece.
It's my favorite piece. It was made by a guy named Mike Hill. Mike Hill is this artist that everybody knows about who makes art pieces out of these things from the Universal films and from the older stuff. But the reason that the Wicked Witch is such a meaningful piece to me is because Judy Garland was my next door neighbor, literally my next door neighbor.
Of course.
And so I would go over and talk to her about The Wizard of Oz and stuff that she had done. And she talked about Margaret Hamilton, and she was so, so loving. I mean, Margaret Hamilton was, she had such great memories of her. I told you, when she made that movie, you know, everybody thought, oh, she's this old hag. You know, she was 36 years old. She was like a kid.
Right.
And only 5'2", so they had to put her on shoes that would lift her up and make her bigger. And she always had this black costume on and never complained about the Technicolor lights, which were, that stage was so hot. She was also the one, you know, between the Tin Man, the Cowardly Lion, the Wicked Witch, the Scarecrow, she's the only one that got hurt because the makeup she had on had a copper base in it. Mm. And you remember how she appeared in that plume of fire and disappeared? Okay, that was practical. It was real. I mean, there was no CGI.
Yeah.
So she was standing next to these plumes of fire. And the copper heated up on her face and burned her. It's like second degree burns. So they had to take her away for a month. And then Judy said when she came back, it was like, hi, everybody. I'm back. Okay, let's all go back to work. So she was a sweetheart. Mm. And so I love stories like that. You know, a lot of the movie villains are always the nicest people.
Mm.
Boris Karloff was, I mean, he was an acquaintance. He wasn't a close friend, but I met him several times. And he was such a nice guy. Very, very dignified British guy. Great manners. You know, loved fans. He was happy to talk about Frankenstein and the Mummy. And he was great, really great guy.
Well, it's interesting too because you have such a great collection from that era of Karloff, and then there's the Bela Lugosi, and like you said, you've got a Lon Chaney Jr. Wolfman, you got a Lon Chaney Sr. Phantom of the Opera. So you're including a lot of these kind of universal classic monsters, not because you have the actual pieces, but you just want to keep them. Part of the whole scene here?
You're exactly right. I mean, if you do a science fiction, fantasy, and horror Hall of Fame or a show of this kind where you want a cross-section of everything, you have to include those people. So for me, this is not just about showing the public stuff. It's about preserving the history. Mm. So a lot of the stuff that's in here, I've had rebuilt by guys. I have a team of people to do. They rebuild stuff for me, and they really, really fix stuff up. One guy named Joe Petro in particular is one of the best in the world at doing this stuff. And he's the guy that's restored a lot of it. But you want to have Karloff, and you want to have Bela Lugosi, and you want to have the old timers too, because if it wasn't for those guys, a lot of this stuff wouldn't be here. And so like when you see the Universal characters here, you know, I have Bela Lugosi in here. His family's very excited that he's in here, but he should be in here because Dracula launched the whole Universal horror movie cycle. And if it hadn't been for the success of Dracula, who knows if any of this stuff would have been made. So I think having a place like this, you have to be cognizant of the history of it. But I enjoy that. I love the old stuff. And I love having that stuff in here. But I think it has to be here. The old stuff has to be here. The new stuff have to be here. If you like superheroes, great. But you should also see where a lot of this came from. So you should see the old Batman stuff. And you should see, you know, the old Chaney and Karloff stuff, I think. I think that's part of the preservation of the history of it.
It's interesting, too, because you mentioned the artist that kind of does the, I guess, the actual models, the mannequins, per se, shall we say. Because you have like this great costuming and stuff, but then the faces look exactly like they're supposed to look. Like Margaret Hamilton looks like Margaret Hamilton. I'm looking at Leonard Nimoy right now as Spock. So you're obviously having somebody come to design the actual faces themselves, so people know right away, oh, that's Spock's shirt, because Spock is wearing
it. Right. That's a very important part of this. So I have artists that build stuff for me. And I'm not an artist myself. I mean, I can't draw. I'm terrible. But I can spot a really good sculpt and a really good paint job like a mile away. And so I have guys do this stuff for me, and the stuff has to be perfect or I won't put it in here. So that's another thing. I have a team of artists that do that kind of work. And I think I really admire what they do, and I'm proud to show their work off.
Let's kind of go through some of the different subjects and genres and movies and stuff. So I'm looking at the Star Wars. We're sitting right by it. Is it hard to get these actual legit Star Wars pieces? And how do you find them, for example?
Star Wars stuff is really hard to come by.
Right.
The strange thing about it is that Lucasland up in Marin County, where George Lucas had his studio, they had a warehouse up there that was so much of this stuff in it, it's unbelievable, which he still has. Now, he's building a museum downtown in L.A. here. So I'm
George's.
Sure. Yeah.
Wow.
So I'm sure a lot of this stuff is going to end up there. But the reason I think it's unusual is Star Wars stuff at auction is literally gold. I mean, it costs so much money to buy a Stormtrooper head or a piece of C-3PO or a lightsaber or something like that. And yet for these movies that, you know, for the Stormtroopers, they made 40, 50, 60 of them. Darth Vader costumes is probably, for each movie, there's probably at least four. So there's like 11 or 12 of those out there, but you can't get them.
That's still not a lot, though, when you think about
it. No, but the thing is, you can't get them. You can't get your hands on them because Lucas saved everything, which actually I thought he was smart to do.
Sure.
So the Star Wars stuff is really expensive, and it's hard to come by.
But you got a Luke's lightsaber over here.
I did. Yeah, I have one of his lightsabers. I bought that a long time ago.
Where? From where?
I got that from an auction house. You know, because all of this, the provenance on stuff from auctions, from the auction houses, has to be pretty well defined. I mean, auction houses have to be careful about what they sell, because just like the art world, this has become such a big business that there's a lot of trickery and there's a lot of fakes. So you have to look out for it. I also have a group of people that kind of vet this stuff for me. So, I bought that a while ago. And so I put it into a glass case with a life cast of Mark Hamill as Luke Skywalker as he appeared in the movie. So that's his lightsaber and his face, how he looked when he used the lightsaber. But the Star Wars stuff is really hard to get. It's hard to find.
Do you keep track of the auction houses? Like, I know, like, I bought a signed Paul McCartney Hofner bass a few years
ago. Is it one of the ones he played?
Yeah, one of the ones he played, with a certificate of authenticity and where he signed it at a hotel in New York, and et cetera, et cetera. Because I was trying to buy an Eddie Van Halen played guitar, but it was super expensive. But
A Kramer,
yeah.
One
of Frankensteins, right?
Yeah.
But the McCartney wasn't super expensive, and I was able to get that one. But being in an auction was crazy, because you're like, you know, here's my money. Don't spend more. Don't bid more. Like, for that 24 hours, I was like nervous wreck.
Yeah.
Is that how it is for you when you go to these auctions?
No, I'm pretty used to it by now. And here's the thing that's really strange. Most of the auction houses, and the guys that run them are friends of mine, most of them, they usually recycle a lot of stuff. So I don't buy as much as I used to, because I have most of the stuff that comes around at auction now. That's really a strange phenomenon. And the reason that that happened is because so much of the monsters and dinosaurs are all CGI now. So there's maquettes of stuff. But I love A Quiet Place. I love that movie. Mm-hmm. I just think it's a great movie. And those monsters in that movie are really good, but there's only pieces of them. Mm-hmm. A piece of a hand, a piece of a foot, and the rest of it's all CGI. So mm-hmm. the only thing that exists of that is a maquette. So I look at stuff now and they still have stuff from, you know, Jason movies, Freddy movies, you know, the Halloween series, Michael Myers stuff. But I have so much of that stuff that I don't buy a lot of that stuff anymore because I've got it. I mean, you know, I used to say to my wife, how many Freddy heads, you know, how many do I need? And she'd say, well, you've got like 700. You don't need more, do you? It's like, I don't know. So it's funny because a lot of the stuff, the older stuff, they kind of recycle. And I don't buy too much because I still have all that stuff.
Let's go through the Batman costumes. You got a super impressive array of almost every era of the modern day Batman.
Yeah, the cool thing is I have one of Michael Keaton's costumes, which was the first one he wore in 1989. And then I have his full costume from Batman Returns. So he's covered. Then Kilmer played it in Batman Forever. I happen to like that movie. I think it's good. I've got both his sonar suit and the Panther suit. I have both of those. Those were all the originals. And then I have all the stuff of Chris O'Donnell's, all the Robin stuff. Then I have Clooney's stuff from Batman and Robin. As I said, Clooney hates that movie, which I think is very funny. But the suits look great. But I have Chris O'Donnell's stuff from that. And then I have all the villains. Like I have Jack Nicholson's original costume as the Joker, Heath Ledger's original Joker, Joaquin Phoenix's Joker, Michelle Pfeiffer's Catwoman, Danny DeVito's Penguin, Mr. Freeze. I've got Schwarzenegger's original stuff. I have Alicia Silverstone's costume as Batgirl. So I'm covered with the Batman guys up to Ben Affleck because I have Christian Bale stuff too. But I don't have any of the Batman stuff from Batman versus Superman or any of the Ben Affleck stuff like from Suicide Squad simply because the stuff hasn't come around at auction. Now, I'll tell you something interesting about the auction world. If you buy stuff at auction, it's considered sale, what's called sale in a public forum. So like the Hofner base, if you bought that at an auction, if the auction house you bought it from and they went out, you know, internationally, anybody, you competed with people around other parts of the world who may have been bidding on that.
Right.
But once you get it, because it was sold in a public forum, you then have the right to show that to people and charge them to see that. I don't know if you know that.
I didn't know that.
Yeah. It's called the International Right of Fair Usage.
Wow.
The International Law of Fair Usage. So I can
open up a museum and put this space in it. And you have to pay $5 to see it.
As long as I'm not one-offing this stuff and using their heads to sell t-shirts and using them in a commercial way. If they sit inside the usage of it being a museum or a collection, then I can charge people to come in and see it. So that's a big advantage to buying stuff at auction.
So was all those Batman costumes come from auction then?
Yeah.
Wow.
Every single one of them, yeah.
Okay. So you obviously have a reputation for being a high roller when it comes to these sorts of things. The people come to you personally first and say, hey, before I put this up on auction, I'll give you the opportunity to buy this.
About once a week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you ever take them up on it?
Yeah.
Like, what's the most recent few things that you've bought from somebody direct?
I bought a TIE fighter from Star Wars that belonged to a guy named Grant McCune that built all the miniatures.
Yeah, I know that name.
That's really nice. Yeah, I bought that. What else did I buy from somebody individually? I don't know. I mean, I buy so much stuff, I lose track of it.
But stuff,
maybe a Wonder Woman, one of her swords or something like that. It depends. The stuff comes around. I bought a clown head from the Terrifier.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, I love that.
Yeah.
Yeah. The same guy I got from Sinister. I got one of the heads from Sinister from the same guy. Yeah, that's cool. Sorry. Go ahead. You were saying.
Going on the horror platform, you've got a crazy collection back there. So many cool things, like the one that pops in my head, because it's funny too, because as we're walking through here, you've got a little magic going on where you make some of the things jump at you, and you kept trying to scare me, and you did many times, so.
No, but you were pretty good, though.
Well, because I was trying to be cool, but I knew you were going to get me. Like, you have one of the facehuggers from Alien, like, oh, look at all the genitalia.
The
like,
hey,
I know
it.
What
yeah,
he wants
yeah,
me
yeah.
to do. He wants me to lean into this, and he's going to move it, and it's going to go, psh, and it did. But talk about some of these great horror pieces. Like, once again, something as obscure as Jack Nicholson's jacket and axe from The Shining.
Yeah, I've got that. The Shining is a very, very famous film, so yeah. I've got that. I collect stuff that I think people want to see.
Sure.
Not just the things that I think are great. If I think people want to see them, that's why I collect them. But I've got stuff from The Shining, great stuff from Silence of the Lambs. You know, I've got the muzzle mask and his prison uniform, his straight jacket. That's all on display. I've got great stuff from a movie called Dead Silence, which a lot of people didn't go to, which is a fantastic James Wan movie. A creepy old lady that builds ventriloquist dummies. Really good.
I haven't seen it. I'll have to check it out.
Yeah, I've got all the originals from that. Great clown stuff. I have a lot of clown stuff. Like I've got John Carroll Lynch's Pennywise. Oh, sorry, his Twisty is here.
Yeah.
And then I have Bill Skarsgård's entire Pennywise costume with his head on it, made up as Pennywise, standing next to the portrait lady. And I've got some really good Freddy stuff. I have some really good Friday the 13th stuff, Kane Hodder stuff that he wore as Jason. Mm-hmm.
You got some great Jason.
Great Jason stuff. Well, got a lot of great Chucky stuff.
You mentioned the one from, before we get into Chucky, you mentioned from part seven, the Jason. Is that the one that was at the bottom of the lake?
Yeah, I have a suit that actually crawled out of Crystal Lake. And when I got it, it was kind of waterlogged. So we had to do a lot of preservation on that suit. But I mean, got a lot of that stuff. I got a lot of really cool Chucky stuff because everybody knows the Chucky stuff. Then I have some great stuff from Saw, including the jigsaw puppet that jumped up and scared you. Yeah. That one got you. That was cool.
It was a good one, yeah.
Yeah, but anyway, so the horror stuff, I mean, I love all that stuff. We got the old stuff. We have the new stuff. Terrifier, Sinister, a lot of Scream stuff. Mm. You know, so, you know, it just goes on and on and on. Depends on what comes around.
Do you have like a wish list of things? Like I need more pieces of this.
No, I love Jurassic Park stuff.
You got a lot of cool Jurassic Park.
Great of dinosaurs. Well, I love the Jurassic Park stuff because people are so impressed to see them full size.
Yeah, they're huge.
They're huge. I mean, these T-Rexes and things, they're like, these things are huge. So I get a kick out of people seeing that stuff. I get a kick out of people seeing things where they remember where they were when they saw stuff. Mm-hmm. Like the Exorcist dummy in here.
Yeah.
People remember where they were when they saw the Exorcist because it was so scary.
Is that an actual dummy?
That's all stuff made from molds from Dick Smith's lab.
Gotcha.
The only Exorcist dummy that turns its head around in the movie is in a place called the Museum of the Modern Image, and it's in the Moving Image, sorry, and it's in New York. They only made one. And the funny thing about that is she turns her head around twice in the movie, and they made a dummy for her to do it the first time. And the progression of the makeup was when the dummy first turns its head around, she was only kind of bad. And then she got really bad, looking terrible. Mm-hmm. But Dick Smith actually took the dummy and made the dummy up like he would have made the actress up to look worse. Mm. And so that dummy's the one that's in New York. I don't have that, but I have all of the life casts and makeup that was used to make her look progressively worse as the movie goes on. So all of that stuff has been rebuilt from Dick's stuff. Mm. And so having the production made molds in the original pieces, that's pretty cool. So I rebuilt that, but you also see it here in a cage that jumps at people. Mm-hmm. So most of the stuff that jumps at people aren't the original things because you can't have the originals moving all the time because they'll fall apart.
Right, sure. Yeah.
So a lot, some of those are repros.
Yeah. What about Child's Play? You mentioned you got some great Child's Play.
I've got great Child's Play stuff. I've got an original Chucky doll when he looks bad. I've got two Chucky dolls when he's still the good guy doll. I've got Ed Gale stuff from Bride of Chucky. I've got a Tiffany doll with all the original clothes and stuff, and an original Chucky from Bride of Chucky. Yeah, I mean, I've got a lot of that stuff that's, you know, everybody recognizes that stuff. You know, I guess he's the most famous puppet in horror movie history, so you got to have him in there. That puppet and the Yoda puppet are the two most famous puppets, I would think.
Two most famous puppets.
That were used in science fiction and horror movies.
Because
yeah.
You've got a Yoda right over here.
I have a Yoda sitting over here, and I told you guys as we were going through, this is a Yoda that was made for The Empire Strikes Back. It was made from original molds. That's not one of the original puppets. And I was telling you, one of the original puppets from that movie now would cost about $4 million. I'm like, I love to collect, but I'm not insane.
Right.
No, I'm not doing that. So I built this from original molds. That's where I got it.
Which pieces in here were the most expensive?
The dinosaurs were really expensive. The bat suits were really expensive when they first came up. They're really expensive now. They've tripled in value. Darth Maul, that's Ray Park's original costume from Phantom Menace. That's really expensive. Wow. The Queen Alien's made from original molds. She's huge. That's an expensive piece. The maquette was really expensive to get that from as the Queen Alien. The Predators were all pretty expensive, especially the completed suits on the great big
guns. They're quite big too, yeah.
AVP, yeah. All of that stuff was pretty. And by the way, the Mike Hill stuff that he made for Universal, you know, the Universal repros, those are really expensive. Mm. Those are art pieces, but they're considered art pieces and they're sold as art pieces, so they aren't cheap. A lot of that stuff's expensive. Every now and then you pick up something, you get a deal on it. Mm. And it's like, because someone wants to unload it or
right. They
think it's not in good condition, you get a deal on it. So then when you recondition, it's worth a lot more money. But, you know, yeah, I think the dinosaurs are probably the most expensive stuff in here because they're so big and bulky. And then, you know, the problem with a lot of this stuff is first you have to pay for it. Then you have to pay the buyer's commission for it. Mm. Then you have to do sales tax. Then you have to ship it. Then you have to preserve it and rebuild it. Then you have to bring it down here and ship it again. So something like that, you know, if it costs $80,000 or $85,000 to buy it, it'll probably cost you like $127,000 to get it here. You said, I mean, complete, including the sale.
Especially that head is, I don't know, 8 feet off the ground or whatever the hell it is. It's super big. But when you're talking about, you say you have to preserve it. So when some of these costumes come in, or like, what do you have to do to make sure, like, are there temperature controls you have to worry about?
You have to keep stuff in air-conditioned rooms. But you also, see, in this collection, as I told you earlier, we have neoprene rubber, foam rubber, silicone rubber, and slip rubber. Mm. Okay, so the foam rubber stuff that's applications and silicone that goes on people's faces, a lot of that stuff was, you know, built to last for a week.
Right.
You know, they didn't expect it to be in some museum. So it starts to deteriorate, especially the foam. So you have to then bake it. You have to, like, recondition it. You have to restore it, put rubber back on it, repaint it. I love the baby pteranodon birds from Jurassic Park 3. I love those. Those are puppets built by the Stan Winston Company. All of them are screen used. But when I got them, they were collapsed and sad looking, and they're laying in a pile, and, you know, they were turning to mummy dust and everything. I turned them over to Joe Petro. He rebuilt them, and they're literally perfect now. The Stan Winston guys came through and said, oh my God, I worked on that film. I can't believe you got this stuff, and it looks like that. So, you know, a lot of this needs, you know, some TLC.
Sure.
And you really do have to take care of it. And, you know, if you're a serious collector about it, I don't want to see stuff that's falling apart. And I want people to see it the way it was in the movie. So it's a lot of work fixing this stuff.
There's a lot of maintenance, like, just on a day-to-day basis?
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Because every day something, like, will need to be polished or cleaned or fixed or whatever it is. As you sit here now, I've got another 50% of this stuff. It's either in storage or it's down with guys that are restoring it.
Hmm.
So this is going on all the time. The stripe head in the Gremlin section, that only came in here about a week and a half ago because one of his ears was falling off. So we had to, like, paint.
So who do you send it to fix a stripe head?
I sent it to this guy, Joe Petro.
Okay.
He's got a company. He runs his own company, and he fixes all this stuff. And it's just,
wow.
When I get it back from him, it's like brand new. And he's, you know, he's this guy that he pulls up every production still and every behind the scenes still. And he looks at stuff with these little magnifying glasses. And if it has a little crease in it, he copies the crease.
It's almost like being a taxidermist or something.
Yeah. That's right. You're exactly right. It's very similar to that, except it's all this horror stuff and monster stuff and sci-fi stuff.
Let's talk about your relationship with Stan Winston. Lots of stuff in here is Stan Winston kind of created and influenced.
Right. Well, when Stan was making Jurassic Park.
Stan Winston is a famous makeup effects guy.
Yeah, the most famous makeup men in history were Jack Pierce, who did all the Universal stuff.
Yeah.
Followed by Rick Baker, mm-hmm. who's won 7 Academy Awards. He's been nominated for 11. Followed by Stan Winston. And then Rob Bottin. Mm-hmm. All of these guys were really, really, really famous guys. And then a guy named Dick Smith.
Right.
And Dick Smith is kind of, you know, Jack Pierce was Dick Smith's hero.
Yeah.
Dick Smith was Rick Baker's hero.
Yeah.
Yeah. So everybody has a hero, you know. So
Rick Baker is Greg Nicotero's hero.
Yeah, no, exactly. Yeah. Rick, that's exactly right. So anyway, I met Stan a few times when they were making Jurassic Park because a friend of mine named Joe Reeder was one of the guys that built a lot of these dinosaurs. And he would invite me down to Stan's place out in the valley to see them building this stuff. And of course, you know, I was fascinated. I thought it was great. But Stan also had a conference room with a lot of stuff around it from the movies he had built. And I just thought, oh man, this stuff is so cool.
Mm.
Well, so I kind of knew Stan, he was an acquaintance. So fade out. So Stan passes away. Right before he passes away, I'm directing a show called The Sweet Life of Zack and Cody. And we need this guy to come in and play the host of, like, a beauty contest. And we hire this guy, Matt Winston. I thought, I wonder if Matt Winston's related to Stan Winston. Well, it's his son.
Mm.
Matt ends up turning into not only this fantastic actor, but the nicest guy in the world. I hit this relationship up with him. He becomes a friend of mine. Stan passes away. They decide to sell everything that's in, like, his conference room and a lot of stuff out of his lab. So I start buying the stuff. I bought like 80% of it. So I started to preserve all of that stuff and put it up. And then I said to Matt, hey, you should come and see your dad's stuff. And he freaked Like, it's like coming back to Stan's original lab. There's so much of his stuff here. And he got very emotional about it because I told him, look, you know, I got to tell you honestly, Stan was a hero of mine and he still lives here. He's still here.
Wow.
Stan is still here. And Matt just loved it. And, you know, this place is like a big tribute to Rick and Rick Baker and Jack Pierce and Rob Bottin and Stan Winston and even Greg's Nicotero stuff is here. So I like that preservation part of it. My relationship with Stan in the Stan studio is that through his son, his memory kind of lives on, and I love showing his stuff to people. And if you like Stan Winston, this is a good place to come.
Oh, this is a place, yeah.
They send a lot of their students down here to see a lot of Stan's stuff.
To see his work?
Yeah, and I love that. I think that's cool.
What's your favorite Stan Winston piece you have in here?
I think it has to be the T-Rex heads. I mean, that's just so impressive.
Right.
The stuff is crazy good.
Let's talk about your relationship with Hugh Hefner. You mentioned that you knew him, and there's a great piece over here of a creature in the Black Lagoon that you had in the grotto.
Right. Hef was a friend of mine. I met him in 1983 when I was producing this show for the Motion Picture Hospital called King Kong's 50th premiere. Like, we redid the premiere of King Kong 50 years after its release at the Chinese Theater. And we needed benefactors. And we contacted Hugh Hefner because I had heard from our PR people that he was a big film fan. And he literally was the first guy that contacted us back and said, yeah, I'm in. I'll be one of the benefactors. I'll help you do it. I'll help promote it. I'll be one of the stars that shows up. So it was this big gala event that we had at the Chinese Theater. And I was psyched because I ended up watching King Kong in the Chinese Theater, introducing the movie with Fay Wray, who was the star of the movie. And I was sitting next to her watching the movie. I mean, to be in the same theater, sitting next to Fay Wray, watching that movie was the best. But anyway, that's how I met Hefner. And he got to be a friend of mine. He realized that I was this big film fan. And so he put me on the list to be like a regular at the mansion. So I used to go to the mansion all the time. And so right around in the late 90s, he was talking about, you know, he would see this stuff at my house from time to time on Halloween, because we do a big Halloween thing. We have like 8,000 people show up for Halloween. And he and his wife used to come and bring the kids when they were little. And he would say to me, you know, we should put some of the stuff up at the mansion for Halloween. And I said, well, if it's not here or on tour or something, I'd be happy to do it. So in the late 90s, like 98, it wasn't. And I went to him and I said, you want to do a Halloween party? And he said to me, yeah, okay, but I want it to be like the biggest Halloween party ever. You never say that to a Halloween freak. You never say that to a Halloween freak. So I gave him an idea. I designed a party for him. I gave him a budget. He approved the budget. He and I, like two 12-year-old kids, would walk around the mansion. I'd go, okay, now over here, Hef, this guy's going to come out of the ground and try to grab people. He'd go, yeah, I really want to scare people. He was great. He was like a kid. So we had a lot of fun doing that. But that's my relationship with him was about a 25-year relationship. But that's the most fun I ever had, was doing all the Halloween stuff. Well, he was a big Universal horror movie fan. Mm. So the more of that stuff, the better. And I told him, look, the most famous spot on the property is the grotto. So I'm going to put the creature from the Black Lagoon in the grotto. He said, come on. I said, I'm going to put it in here. He said, I'll be in heaven. So we put it in there, and it was in there year after year. The photograph you saw is a photograph of him standing next to the statue in the grotto, and that's the actual statue that you see when you walk through the tour here. So, you know, that was rebuilt from original mold, so that was not a screen-used costume, but that was a costume I built basically for Hef. Mm-hmm. I got it back when they auctioned off a lot of his stuff. I said, I have to get the creature from the Black Lagoon, because I'm the guy that built it for him. I got it back, and here it is. And so everyone wants to hear the story about it. By the way, he was the nicest guy in the world. There's some documentaries out about him now that are very negative. Mm-hmm. That's all a bunch of, you know what? Mm-hmm. That's not true. He was a really polite, sweet, kind guy. The whole Halloween thing at Playboy started with me trying to be reciprocal. Mm-hmm. How the hell are you going to be reciprocal to Hugh Hefner, who invites you to all this stuff?
Right.
And, you know, and that's how it started. That's how the Halloween thing started. So he was a great guy. He couldn't have been nicer. He was great to my wife and just super nice. We were, you know, the girls next door, I think my wife and I were in like three or four of those episodes. And we just had a great time. The Playboy Mansion was like home away from home. And it was a beautiful place, great place. He had a party every night. Mm-hmm. He had a dinner party every single night. But it was movies, new movies, old movies. He was a big movie fan, and I was too. So we just like blended. It was great. So that's how that started.
You mentioned earlier that you have a Halloween collection
yeah.
of the holiday Halloween. So what kind of, what exactly does that even mean?
When I was a little kid, and my brothers and sisters were all older than me, and I, so we, they were growing up in the 40s, and I was born in the late 40s. And we would, for Halloween, my parents would, you know, my dad would carve a pumpkin, and we'd have a breakfast room with all of these really cool, like, cardboard decorations that were, like, you know, really had a lot of character. Then when we moved away, we all grew up and moved away, you know, all that stuff gets junked.
Right.
And then along comes eBay. And I thought, oh my God, there's stuff on eBay that reminds me of all the stuff when I was a little kid. So I started buying vintage Halloween decorations. And now I have this collection that dates back to around 1920 of stuff that comes all the way up through the 60s and then all the modern stuff. And then there's a company out of Mesa, Arizona called Midnight Studios that builds, they're the guys that build the best Halloween decorations ever seen. Of full-size things and werewolves and zombies and everything. So then I started doing my house. I live in Hancock Park, which isn't far from here. I started doing the house up for Halloween, and then it got famous. Like, oh, that's the Halloween house. Mm-hmm. And then it got bigger and bigger and bigger. So I had practical stuff that we'd set up outside. I had moving stuff. We have 30 actors. We have stuff in the windows. We have stuff on the roof. But I started collecting stuff and going to conventions. Believe it or not, there's a Haunters convention. There's a Halloween convention. I'd go to those conventions and start collecting this stuff. So Halloween was just this, like, my favorite day. I mean, I should have been born on Halloween.
Right,
it was like
right.
always my favorite day. And I just had so much fun with it. So, you know, I was like, you know, a big kid. You know, thank God I was, you know, I made a good living so I could afford some of this stuff. And I was just like this big kid, and that made me happy. And subsequently, it made all these people. And, you know, we have neighbors walk by the house every day going, I'll see you on the October 31st, you know, because it was always the same thing. But I've had a lot of fun doing all this stuff. I had a lot of fun collecting all this stuff. So I've had fun doing all of this stuff. To me, it's just like I'm a big kid.
Well, that's the idea, is that you get all this stuff and you don't want to keep it in a warehouse so nobody can see it. So the fun of it is actually putting it out so people can appreciate it and enjoy it with you, right?
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And I'm really excited about moving it to Vegas because it's so much bigger.
What's the idea to move to Vegas?
The idea is it's going to be a science fiction, fantasy, and horror Hall of Fame.
Gotcha.
Like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Right.
Only all about this stuff. And I'm going to pull the entire collection out. And for the first time in my life as a collector, I'll actually have a collecting budget.
Hmm.
That'll be nice.
Meaning?
That's never happened before.
What do you mean by that?
Well, because a line item in the budget is money you can spend on collecting. So I don't have to, like, open my my wallet and pay for the stuff, you know? So I'm excited about that. But I really do want to do this Hall of Fame thing because, look, movies became popular, believe it or not. I mean, movies... The first movies were made around 1890, 1895, 97. They were making movies. Edison was making movies. And then movies became, you know, popular in Nickelodeons and things like that around 1903, 1907, 1912. People were going to the movies. And the single most successful continuing genre in the history of the movies was science fiction, fantasy, and horror films.
Mm-hmm.
Even from the silent days, those movies never went out of style and they never didn't make money.
Right.
So, you know, musicals came and went, westerns came and went, film noir came and went, you know, that kind of thing. Action is huge now, superheroes is huge now, but horror movies and sci-fi movies are still these mainstays at the box office, but yet very few of them have ever won any awards. And nobody has ever paid tribute to them. Never.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you know, there's a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame because rock and roll is awesome. There should be a Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. But how come there's no science fiction, fantasy, and horror Hall of Fame? Because, I mean, the legions of fans internationally, it's like 365, 370 million fans internationally. It just goes crazy over this stuff. Yet there's no headquarters. There's no central place for it. And with this collection as the centerpiece of it, I want to start that. I want to have this Hall of Fame. And it's not about me. It's not about, oh, look what Rich collected. It's about what people can come in and see, what people remember, what people had fun seeing and remembering as in their childhood or later on, and preserving the history of it. Because the guys who are making movies today, the Greg Nicoteros of the world, are important to me, but so's Jack Pierce and the guys who have passed away. So's Karloff, and so's, you know, John Barrymore and Lon Chaney Sr. and people who made these films and made them what they were, you know, 80 years ago, 100 years ago, and their families are still around. You know, you can have inductee ceremonies and pay tribute to them via their families and stuff. So I think it's a great idea, and I want to preserve all this history. I'm really adamant about, you know, having people recognize how important they've been to the film business, really.
Do you put in characters as well, or just actors? Like, does Frankenstein go in the Hall of Fame?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, sure.
A character wing.
Sure, sure, sure. I mean, the movie Frankenstein, when it was released right before Christmas in 1931. Basically made all its money in 1932, but that film ended up in 1931 in the New York Times top 10 best movies of the year.
Yeah.
It didn't happen very often with horror movies. Dracula was a runaway, huge success. Didn't quite have that accolade to it, you know, mm-hmm. but it still was a major success. So it's like all of those guys have to be in there. Mm-hmm. Chaney has to be in there. Lugosi has to be in there. Boris Karloff and Peter Lorre and all those guys have to be in there because they helped build all this stuff. You know, we're all products of what those guys put down before us. So I want to, like, pay tribute to them. And it's fun. It's really, Bela Lugosi's, like, granddaughter contacted me and said, oh, it's so cool that he's in there. I said, are you kidding? I would never have a thing like this without him in here.
Pull the strings.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
There's a really cool display over here of about nine face molds, and it's Basil.
Life cast.
So yeah. Explain what that was going on.
Okay. Okay. Life casting was this process where they would bring an actor in to the makeup lab and with plaster, they put plaster on their face and make a mold of the face. So they could pull out and work on a mold of the guy's face. Now, why would they want to make a mold of somebody's face? It's because when they were doing the makeup, they could send the actors home, right? And still build the makeup on their faces so that when the makeup, when they came to work, like for Frankenstein, Jack Pierce had already built the pieces.
Because he had the mold of their face.
Because he had the mold, the exact mold of his face. Right. Exactly. Now, what's cool about that is most actors and actresses, a lot of them have been face molded for various reasons, for whatever reason, you know, to be used in a movie. But it's the only process that was started as early as like 1923. That's exactly the same today. They still use that process today. And that's one of the only things that's out there. So what I did was I was able to get a whole bunch of these life casts of, you know, Vincent Price and Peter Lorre and John Carradine and Boris Karloff and Bela Lugosi and Lon Chaney and all this. I got all those life casts.
Those are legit live casts.
Yeah, well, yeah.
Live casts.
And so what that is that shows people how they built the makeup, and then you can look over and see the makeup they built, and then look over and see the life cast it was made from. So I see that kind of stuff is cool.
You got like Bruce Lee too. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, Bruce Lee was a strange story. I found that in a building 16 hours before the building was knocked down by a ball and chain.
Wow.
Yeah, and people had been searching for that for years because when Bruce made the Green Hornet in 66, both he and Van Williams were life casted because they had to make vacuum form masks of the Green Hornet and Kato.
Mm-hmm.
So they knew that was there, but no one could find it. And I found it. Well, I found it, and I found it in this building. And 16 hours later, the building was demolished. So had I not taken out of there, it probably would have been gone forever.
And you just happened to stumble into these places on time.
I happened to stumble into it on time. It's a very strange story. And I kind of went there looking for it, and I was just... I went up in the rafters of this old building, and there was the windows, I swear to God this is true. The windows and the ceilings had been kind of cracked, and there was light coming through this broken window going down to a table, pointing down to this table. And I went and looked, and I saw this thing that said Van Williams. And I went, Van Williams, okay, well, he played the Green Hornet. I wonder if Kato's here. And I lifted this thing off where the light was, and the life cast was underneath that tarp. And I went, oh my God. So I got both Williams and Lee.
I was going to mention too about The Thing, probably my favorite all-time horror movie, the remake by John Carpenter. And one of the best pieces, of course, is the spider head.
Spider head, yeah.
Is that a replica or is that the actual spider head?
No, that's an actual spider head. They made four of them. Two of them they burned up. And then the third one was sold at auction about 2 weeks ago. And that, I think, was on the cover of Cinema Fantastique with a picture of Rob, I think. I think that's the one. And then this one also came from Rob Bottin. It was made for the movie. When I got it, it wasn't in very good condition. One of the eyes had to be replaced.
I saw this. So once again, you send it to our taxidermy friend to do all this stuff?
Same guys, yeah. And what they do is they look at it and then they try to do it exactly the way they see it in all the photographs. They get as many photographs because the spider head, the thing was really cool because they didn't use any CGI. That was before CGI. Mm. So Rob Bottin built all these practical effects. So the spider head was actually a thing that was puppeted.
Oh, wow. This is like stop motion almost?
No, it was actually puppeted.
Oh, my gosh.
Like they were actually using it like a Henson puppet. And that's one of the, this is one of the heads that was puppeted around. But this is one that didn't obviously burn up because, you know, it's still, it was, when I got it, it was in bad condition. I told you they offered me one of the dogs where the head splits on the husky, but you couldn't even tell what it was. It was so trashed. It was. It looked like a pile of fur and KY jelly or something. It was not in good condition. But this thing was pretty bad shape, and I thought, yeah, we can fix it. And so we did. So that's what you're seeing here.
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I mean, there's so many great pieces in here, like this from The Matrix. I mean, you mentioned the cool kind of replica of Lawrence Fishburne's head, with the, even with the pockmarks in it.
That was all sculpted by a computer. That's why that's so accurate. Yeah, that was done for The Matrix. And Carrie Ann Moss and Hugo Weaving and Keanu Reeves and Lawrence Fishburne, all of those heads were made by a computer. And so I had the suits. I bought the costumes they wore. So, and then I got the heads. So I put them all together. So now you can see them standing there. But that's really their faces. Like, really cool.
It's interesting, too, seeing, like, some of the pieces. And, like, for example, we were looking at Mark Hamill's Stormtrooper outfit and see he's, like, fairly short. And, like Carrie Ann Moss, super tiny. I think Kate Beckinsale also very tiny.
Everything you see in here is the exact height, weight, and everything of the actors that played the parts. Most people are surprised at how small some of the people were. But then on the other hand, their stuntmen who were, you know, 7'3" and 7'4" were in Predator suits and Harry and
the mentioned the guy who was about 7'4", but he's like 150 pounds or something like that.
No, the guy that played the alien was a guy from Nigeria, and he was 6'10", but he only weighed 154 pounds. So when you see the alien suit, because that's the original suit.
From the actual alien.
From the first from movie. Yeah, I love that thing. That's like the holy grail of alien costume. But you look at the legs and you go, there's no way someone can fit in the suit.
Skinny little legs. Yeah.
As you look at the progression of the characters in the movies, you'll see that the legs start to widen because normal stuntmen wore them.
Right.
But when this guy, I mean, this guy was so tall and so thin, he was like a marionette puppet or something. He fit into this thing. And by the way, there's a picture of him too. He passed away at a young age, but there's a picture of him wearing it with the head off.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a diagram of how it works with the head on. So that's a really cool exhibit of, if you like alien stuff, that's really cool.
Starting to wind down here, there's some great Walking Dead stuff in here as well.
Mm-hmm.
And you had a great story about Norman Reedus over there. You got a Daryl replica with the zombies on the ground, a zombie behind him. And how did that kind of all
come
together?
Oh, that was funny, because what happened with that was AMC knew that we were doing this show. Just like Doug Jones knew we were doing the show, so he gave us the maquette for the asset from Shape of Water. Well, when AMC heard we were doing the show, they said, well, we want to make sure Walking Dead's in here. And I already had Walking Dead heads. I had two heads that Greg had built, one of Bicycle Girl and one of Patient Zero. Those were the first two they ever built for the series.
Right.
And they're in a glass case.
Amazing,
here. So they said, we'll give you one of Norman Reedus's suit, but tell us what you're going to do with it. And I said, I'm going to put it on. I'm going to have a sculptor friend of mine make a great head of him. And then I'm going to put it on a mannequin and display it with him standing over a dead zombie. With the arrow in the zombie's head, I have his crossbow. So, and this is the original crossbow, the original costume. And I said, and then just like in the show, but behind him is going to be a zombie creeping up behind him. And so they said to me, oh, okay, so you're going to build this like diorama with zombies. And I said, yeah. And they said to me, well, do you have any zombies? To me. It's like, I have 90. I have a warehouse of zombies. It's like, are you kidding?
I don't know what to do with all the zombies I got.
Right.
Zombies coming out of the ass.
Yeah. That was the easy part. So they were really happy about it. They saw that and just thought it was awesome.
I also like the story you told about the Edward Scissorhands that you said one of the hair and makeup ladies came and actually.
V. Neal came down here. V. Neal was the makeup lady on that. And she and a girl named Yolanda came down here who did the hair.
Uh-huh.
And the two of them got a hold of that mannequin and remade the mannequin up and did the hair exactly the way they worked on Johnny, because that was Johnny. Those were the two people that did Johnny's hair and makeup in the show. So that's his costume and a pair of the scissor hands. And they were, see, it's so cool because those guys love that people still pay attention to their work.
Mm-hmm.
And this is what I'm saying. This is what this whole place is supposed to be. I want to make sure that everybody's work is paid tribute to, because they're so important. You know Edward Scissorhands, and you know Edward Scissorhands, and you know everybody knows what this stuff is. So why not say, well, look, here's the people that made it. Look, I have an Academy Award in here from Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Mm-hmm.
That Michelle Burke and Greg Kamen. Greg Kamen's a really good friend of mine. I bought a ton of stuff from Greg. You know, he's got 4 Academy Awards. I've got 2 of them. I have his Academy Award from Mrs. Doubtfire and his Academy Award from Bram Stoker's Dracula, because he said, Rich, you bought all this stuff. Are you displaying it? I said, yeah. He said, would you display? You can't buy Academy Awards. That's not cool.
Right.
He said, would you, if I gave you the Academy Awards, would you put it by my stuff? I said, absolutely. And, you know, people come in here. Some tourists have never seen an Academy Award up close. And there it is. But more importantly, it's the guys that built these great suits and these great faces and all the stuff that's entertaining you in the movies. Here's another tribute to him because there's their Academy Award. So that's what I'm getting. I love stuff like that. Greg is a good friend of mine. And I mean, you know, he was a sensational makeup artist. And, you know, when he started selling the stuff off, I said, I want it. Mm-hmm. And he said, okay, well, if you want that, you want the Academy Award too? And I went, of course. So, I mean, that's how that happens.
Do you ever have any famous people come in to check it out? Or maybe some people that actually are represented in the suits?
Yeah, people have been in here that have makeup effects guys that have built stuff. Pat would know better than I do. Mm. We've had makeup effects guy. We've had Savini came through here. Bob Burns came through here.
Kirk Hammett.
Oh, Kirk's great.
Kirk loves that.
Kirk.
Stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah, Corey loves it too. Yeah.
Who?
Corey Taylor.
Oh yeah. He, mm-hmm. the guy from Slipknot, was in here. Yeah. And then we had John Landis come through and check out stuff.
You got some great American Werewolf in London.
Oh yeah.
Over there. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Some of the people that have built some of the stuff have been through. You know, the people that built some of the Jurassic Park stuff came through. Again, I told you that the Winston people have come through. Yeah, it's totally awesome. Warner Brothers had a press junket here for Dune, and they were freaking out. They were going through seeing all this stuff. They had so much fun. Most of the tours, if a tour is sold out here, and everybody that tours goes with a docent who knows that, who can show you.
Is that
everything.
How it works? You do tours?
Yeah.
You don't just wander through on your own?
Nobody wanders through on their own. They go through with docents. But when they do, I mean, the biggest tours are usually 10 or 12 people. I mean, Warner Brothers came through with a press junket. They came in with like 30 people at a time. It was pretty cool. But like, I set off those jump scares and they were screaming and it was like the best. It was so much fun. It was like really cool. You can tell I have fun with all this stuff.
But that's the thing. Fun is the key word.
It is.
Last few questions. Is there like a movie franchise that you haven't got into yet that you want to, or that you need to get more of? Like when something comes out, for example, like when The Conjuring came out, you got some great pieces from The Conjuring.
Great. Yeah. I love James Wan. I think his stuff is great. Got some good Insidious stuff. I got some good Conjuring stuff. No, I don't know if there's a franchise that I'm missing that's science fiction, fantasy, and horror in particular. But I'm always looking for stuff.
Like
I mentioned A Quiet Place. I loved both of those movies.
Yeah.
But you can't get, that stuff is all CGI.
Right.
So if you don't have the maquette of the monster or an arm, there's nothing to get.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, the last two Jurassic Park films, and I've liked all of the Jurassic Park films, but the last two, there's not a lot of practical stuff. There's practical stuff they build for like theme parks. Like right now, there's a show touring around called Jurassic World, the stage show.
Mm-hmm.
And you can take kids to like to see, it's like a skating show. You know, the monsters come out and walk around. But those things were built for the stage shows. And not that there's anything wrong with them, but the stuff in the movies, the raptors and the T-Rexes, those are all done by computers now.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really glad, I'm happy that I was able to get the stuff that's in here, because this is kind of the end of the practical stuff. So if you want to see what they really look like in the day, you know, 1993, 1996, 1998, that's, you should come here.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But I mean, to answer your question, I don't know if I'm missing anything from any particular franchise. I have some stuff from Guardians of the Galaxy.
Mm-hmm.
And I have some nice stuff from Wonder Woman. I'm getting more stuff from Captain America. But those seem to be the DC films or the Marvel films. So, you know, I mean, I think they're pretty well represented. I mean, I could always get more, but it depends on what's available and how much it costs.
Yeah, and like you said too, when there's a lot of CGI going on, for example, you have you call them maquettes, I think, of the Army of Darkness, the three skeletons.
Oh yeah, I have a lot of Army.
And there was
Darkness
so much
stuff.
Of that that was stop motion. Obviously, yeah, that's yeah, kind yeah. of old school Ray yeah. Harryhausen type stuff. But it's still kind of cool when you can actually see that and look at it for your own self.
It's good for you, man. I can't believe that you know all that stuff. That's really impressive. Like when you talk about Ray Harryhausen.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Willis O'Brien and Ray Harryhausen were obviously, you know, heroes of mine. All of Ray's stuff, he used to like tear one thing apart to use in another movie. And I met with him at his house in London in 1970.
Jeez.
And he said to me, I made a big mistake when I took the giant emir and turned it into the Cyclops for a Seven Forces Sinbad. And I said, why'd you make a mistake? He said, because I tore down an original artifact to build another, and I'll never do it again.
That's how they used to do it, though. Like you said, of course. At the beginning of this conversation, we talked about you finding something in the trash.
That's what they did with King Kong.
Yeah.
They tore King Kong down to make The Son of Kong.
Yeah.
And The Son of Kong was not a good movie, and King Kong, they should have just left it.
Yeah.
But regardless, after The Seventh Voyage of Sinbad, which is 57, he kept all of his miniatures, and now they're at a museum in London, where Peter Jackson, like, he licks his chops every time he thinks about it, because he's the guy who at auction has bought most of the stop motion stuff, and he pays so much money for it. Forrest Ackerman was a really good friend of mine. I used to visit the King Kong armatures and stuff at his house all the time. I'm glad he had them. I'm glad he preserved them. But all of that stuff belongs to Peter Jackson now, which is also good because Peter takes care of that stuff too. But the Ray Harryhausen stuff, nobody can get it because all of those are one of a kind and they're in this museum. And I'm telling you, if that stuff came up for auction, I can't even imagine how much money they'd make. I can't imagine how much like the original Medusa from Clash of the Titans is worth. Yeah. I mean, it's worth a fortune.
Yeah.
Much more than probably what the film cost.
Right.
Right. So anyway, I'm very impressed, Chris, that you knew about Ray Harryhausen. Good for you, man. That's cool.
Yeah, I used to be a Harryhausen freak when I was a kid.
Well, I got to tell you, in the Vegas setup, I want to do a whole Harryhausen tribute. And the only thing I can do is repro some of that stuff, like the sideshow made really nice Jason skeletons and stuff. But I am building the Cyclops from Seven Boards of Sinbad. And you know me, every single line on it will be perfect, so cool. You know, or I won't put it in there. But that's cool that you mentioned that, yeah.
Last question for you, man. And you mentioned some of the dinosaurs, but besides that, what's your favorite piece in here that you like the most out of all of these amazing things?
My favorite piece is Margaret Hamilton, because Judy Garland was my next door neighbor. I told you about Margaret. I love the alien suit because it's such an iconic piece, and it's so cool to have that in here. And then I think the T-Rex heads. I just love dinosaurs, and as a kid, I loved them. So having them is really the whole thing makes me happy. You know,
I just made a lot of people happy, man. It's going to make you even happier when you move it to Vegas.
Thanks. And you'll have to come to the opening. I want you to come to the opening.
Grand opening.
Yeah. You'll have a great time.
Like we'll have a press pass.
And I'll be running around like I'm 12. It'll be great. You know. Yeah.
Well, we got to get together again and do another podcast about some of your Hollywood experiences too.
Yeah, I've been very, very lucky. I've been really lucky to have so much fun. I've had a fun time my whole career.
Well, dude, this is a fun place here, and thanks for having us, sir. It's been very, very cool,
It's
exciting.
My pleasure. I'm glad you... Listen, you know what? I put this together for people like you because you love it.
Yeah.
And I can tell that. Yeah. You really do, so that's really cool.
Yeah.
I'm glad you came.
Thanks, dude. Now the spider head is going to freak me out for the rest of the day.